We need female Joe Rogans who believe the opposite shit, and we don't have them.
So get set. So hang on. So buckle up. So sit tight. So strap yourself in.
So brace yourself.
So keep your eyes open.
So fasten your seatbelt.
So stick around.
Meow meow. It's me, Sophia. You're listening to This Body, a podcast about being in a body. It is Saturday, April the 5th, 10 a.m. Oh, at the time of this recording, we are a couple of days into the tariff party. And my phone's been ringing. All my friends are calling to talk about the stock market. This is the first time that's ever happened. Perhaps we will remember this time way into the future. Or maybe it will simply merge and meld with all the other watershed energy events of this American life. So I actually tuned into the news for the first time after a long digital hiatus on the day of the tariff announcements. Wow. The world is reacting. Everyone hates us. All my economist podcasters are sounding uncharacteristically stern, really insisting that we must save, 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 tighten our belts, keep our heads down, no spring break this year. If you were about to, say, buy a foreign car and you're not in debt, buy now, today, if you have the cash. And if you don't have the cash, that's me right now, cash poor, then you tighten your belt right now. And if you're a government employee, no one is safe. That's just what I'm hearing. So I'm passing along what I believe is good information. Right now, before I get into the episode, which is not about politics or the economy, well, one could argue that everything is political, couldn't one? But you know what I mean. Before I get into today's topic, which is survivor's guilt, I just want to ask every one of you who listens, please, I need you to do something for me now. I need you. I beg of you, please. On the podcast app that you are listening to, look up the Women and Money podcast with Susie O and add that to your rotation. It's not just for women. It is also for people smart enough to listen. Now, I'm not saying that I enjoy this podcast, though I'm starting to a tiny little bit as things start to make sense. But most of the time, I really have to force myself to listen because, well, we all have complicated relationships with money, don't we? No need to delve into that right now. But look, most of us, women and men and everyone on the gender spectrum, most of us don't really know what our money is doing, what we should be doing with it, how the economy actually works. Not many people understand stocks and shares, bonds, cost value averaging, dollar cost averaging. Most of us don't even know that we have money in the stock market in the form of like Roth IRAs and 401ks, things like that. Myself included, don't know shit about money, but I'm improving just by tuning into that pod with Susie and also by following boring economic shit on Reddit. So would you just please do that for me? You will feel better. Information is power. Do it, do it, do it.
Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it now. Say it, say it, say it, say it, say it, say it, say it now.
So it all got a little bit much for me yesterday, the real world, and what I decided to do instead was to pour myself a glass of wine and alphabetize my vinyl collection. Now, those of you who subscribe over on Patreon know that I was worried that my vinyl collection might have been damaged after the movers moved me out of Altadena into a storage unit, threw everything in there quite haphazardly. I've been in a state of anxiety about my possessions. But thankfully, when I went down there yesterday, I found my vinyl, I found the big grandma shirt dresses, and yeah, I came home and I alphabetized my record collection, and it was very, very satisfying. For those of you listening here on the free feed, This is an abridged version of the extended version that you can find over on Patreon, patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. Now, it's my 46th birthday this month, which is truly unbelievable, especially given the circumstances of my life, which really may have dictated that I wouldn't make it this long. But here I am, turning 46, looking 26. Unbelievable. And to celebrate this monumental event, and also to just give you something for free, because now everything is going to be like 34% taxed to the max, I have added a free 1 week trial for anybody who has been wondering, do they want to throw money at some random chick on the internet? If you've ever been curious about the Patreon, I shouldn't say to do this, but this is what I do sometimes. I will sign up to somebody's Patreon and binge the hell out of everything and then just unsubscribe. And then if I love them, I tend to go back. Sometimes these relationships can take a while to build, you know? But yes, there is a free tier. You sign up. You just got to remember to cancel before the week is up so you don't get charged. And hopefully you do forget and you do get charged. No refunds, babe. But that is over there for anybody who would like to check it out, escape from the tyranny of day-to-day life. Perhaps you just want to know more about yours truly, and who could blame you? Patreon.com/thisbodypodcast.
Make them clap to this.
To show our appreciation for your support.
Make them clap to this.
Thank you.
What else? Oh, yes. The stranded astronauts, Butch and Sonny, they made it back to planet and humanity. That happened. You know, they were carried off the dragon, Elon's dragon capsule, on gurneys, because I guess if you spend like a really long time in space, you cannot even walk anymore. Guys, I heard an interview on the radio with this lady, Laura Faye Tenenbaum, who has a TikTok following now. She is the former senior science editor at NASA, and she was talking about how gross the International Space Station is. I mean, have you ever thought about it, like what it's really like up there? The International Space Station, I think it cropped up in like the year 2000, and 15 different countries with space programs have been just constantly using it. So it's never had nobody in there. They've never sent up like the cleaners to just clean it. And the result sounds fucking disgusting. This chick, Laura, she hit me to some crazed facts about the ISS. It is really dirty up there.
Inside, we knew, but nobody kind of talked about, was how disgusting the space station is. Now, remember, you can't open a window. You can't clean it. So every burp, every smart fart, every sneeze, every cough, every like little loose pubic hair floating around. Like if you touch the wall of the space station, it's like, ew, it's sticky. It's fucking disgusting. So when astronauts first go up there, they need to take all these like antihistamines because it stinks so bad that like it would actually make people sick. The toilets break all the fucking time. So you're still kind of pooping and peeing in a bag sometimes. And then because water is so expensive up there, they have to kind of recycle all the water. So all the pee, all the sweat, all the spit kind of goes through these water recycling machines, and then you can drink it again. We've used the technology down here on Earth, and in some places where there's major droughts, we will have to repurpose our own poopy water and use it. There's also rats, sadly, on the space station, and they also, there's water vapor in their exhale and in their urine, and they have to collect the rat water vapor and urine and repurpose that water too. And I have asked this so many fucking times, how do they collect the rat urine? And like, how do the rats pee and not get pee all over themselves if it's like there's no gravity and the water just floats around? So I have asked again and again and again, and NASA will not disclose, how do they keep those rats clean? So I don't know. how they keep the people clean, I do know. And there's no shower on the space station. So what you do is you get like a baby wipe and you wipe your pits and your junk and you incinerate the baby wipe. So that's, you know, you could be up there minimum 6 months or longer. You just wear your clothes until they're too disgusting and then you incinerate them. To me, the whole idea of space is pretty disgusting. Living in space is pretty disgusting. It's just kind of a nasty place. It's harsh on your body. And my question or my belief is send a robot, send a fucking robot.
So she makes a really good point in my opinion. When Butch and Sonny came back down to Earth after, I don't know how many months they were up there. I think they were supposed to be there for like 40 days or even, maybe less than that, maybe like 10 days. They're up there for fucking months and they were carried away on stretchers because they were all atrophied and shit. They'll expose themselves to radiation, a shortened lifespan, maybe find themselves at the center of a geopolitical incident. Going to space just seems so retrograde. Unfortunately, though, they are sending people to space because, you know, we're ruining the planet. It's going to be over soon. This won't be an inhabitable place to live. So instead of just sending robots up there to do research, SpaceX sent a thing, a spaceship, up into orbit the other day for 4 days of, I don't know what the deal is, but like somehow, you know, on that movie with Sandra Bullock where they're going like round and round the planet really fast, that's what these guys were doing, orbiting the poles, North and South Pole, presumably, because those are the poles. Yes, orbiting the poles every 40 minutes or so for 4 days. Oh, doesn't that just make you feel ill? This was to test the effects of being in space on the human body. So that's where we are. The unfortunate few are going to be colonizing Mars while the rest of us go home to our maker. Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia Forever. The pod's on IG too. Thanks, Tiger. So speaking of the vacuum of outer space, sort of, on today's episode, I'm breaking from the Yoga Ethics series to talk about something a lot of people are currently experiencing en masse, and myself included, and that is survivor's guilt.
So hang on. So get ready.
You just have to be ready. Brace yourself.
What you're about to see will open your eyes.
The surprises never stop.
So you better hang on.
So get ready.
So fasten your seatbelt.
So hold on tight.
So hang on.
So get ready to get ready.
And get ready to get real.
Sylvia Plath used the metaphor of a bell jar to describe her depression, where you're inside the bell jar in this vacuum away from other people, experiencing this terrible sadness with the world being muted outside. I feel like the moment the fires began in LA, I was sort of in a semi-sealed bell jar in this kind of vacuum. When everyone evacuated, we all scattered in different directions. Each resident of Altadena and the Palisades contended with different sets of circumstances, varying degrees of loss. So while it was and is a collective tragedy, we're all emotionally connected by the events, obviously, that occurred. But we're all in different neighborhoods now with different sets of circumstances to contend with. We're all traumatized. We'll all be struggling psychologically, probably for the rest of our lives. I think me, definitely. Some people won't. Trauma works in quite an interesting way. Some people have, they will go through the same experience, but they will react really differently. So not everybody is going to have like PTSD, for example. Some people are going to move through that with a little bit more ease. Just really helps to be mindful and pay attention. But yeah, some people have a roof over their head. Some people have home insurance if their home's burned. Some people died. This leaves us with a diverse landscape to contend with, and for many, a weird, nonsensical, but very real and true sense of guilt. When I was thinking about this, I remembered DJ AM. Now, you may or may not remember this guy. He was a superstar DJ in the mid-2000s, and he was in a plane crash with Travis Barker from Blink-182, now best known as Kourtney Kardashian's husband. But back in, like, I think it was 2007 or something, they were on a plane that upon takeoff, the wheel blew out, and it caused like a horrific plane crash where only Travis Barker and DJ AM survived. And both of them experienced like burns to their entire bodies, especially poor Travis. I mean, it's fucking crazy. If you go back and like revisit those news stories, Travis was very sick. He was like maybe in a coma or something. Both of them had lots of skin grafts, and they lost the two pilots died, and then I believe two members of their crew, like their musical crew, died. And then 1 year later, DJ AM passed away from a drug overdose, and a lot of his friends and professionals believe that it was the plane crash that killed him, but it just took a year to do that, and he really struggled with PTSD and survivor's guilt. Yeah, it was so awful. I saw DJ AM perform once in Auckland when Serato brought him out. Serato is a DJ program where you can use these vinyls that have nothing on them to play music from MP3s through vinyl. Okay, it doesn't even matter, who cares? But I saw him perform. He was crazy. Like, talk about getting the party started. Everyone was just out of their fucking minds. This guy was so gifted. And another thing was that after he had his skin grafts and he was out of hospital, he just wanted to keep working. So he just kept going. He got straight on a plane. He went and played Jay-Z's party or something. And he just never stopped. He just kept on going. And what ended up happening was an addiction that he had beaten in the past came back and it took him away. So last week, I had a couple of experiences that just hit me to the fact that I am having a spot of survivor's guilt and some PTSD. Now, guilt and me, we don't know each other that well. I am not one to beat myself up about things. I'm not a mum, so I don't experience any mother guilt. And mostly just that's not something that haunts me as much as some people. Same with regret. There aren't many things that I really wish had not happened. Not really. There's maybe just one thing when my friend died by suicide. It would have been nice if that hadn't happened. But for the most part, I'm able to find, for lack of a better description, a silver lining for things. Like even in death, I can find something. This one, I really can't. I really can't. I really regret that it happened. I wish that it hadn't happened. I can identify some positives that have arisen in my life as a result of leaving Los Angeles, but that doesn't translate to not wishing that it hadn't happened. I just truly wish that this had never happened. And weirdly, with survivor's guilt, there's this sense that it's your fault personally. It's so bizarre. Like, obviously, we didn't start the fire. But it feels like it. It feels like some sort of responsibility. So the way that I recognize this in myself, as you know, I've pulled a geographic and just completely left. So I've been feeling quite happy, and I'm doing this Yoga Ethics for Modern Living series, so I'm thinking a lot about like contentment and letting go and being happy with what I have. And I really have been in this place of like nature and contentment and gratitude. And then one of my neighbors sent me a text message about the plants that I had left behind, because I had said to her, please take them if you want them. And she wrote back to me, and we sort of went back and forth a little bit. And it just, thinking about what I left behind the plants. I left these outdoor plants that I just intended to give away anyway. But I felt it was crazy. I was like brought to my knees, literally. I was gripping the side of a fucking kitchen island, bawling my eyes out at the thought of like what I left these plants to fend for themselves, and the memory of seeing every single leaf ripped off one of these outdoor plants before the fire had even started because of the wind. And it just, oh my God, it hit me really hard. And then a couple of days later, I was in Palm Springs leaving Pilates, and another neighbor texted me. One of my Amazon packages had arrived, one that I had on subscribe and save, just like cat drinking filters for the pet fountain. And he said, do you want me to take them back to Amazon because I'm doing a return? He's going to Whole Foods. He needed me to send the barcode. And it happened again. I was sitting in my car and I was thankfully stationary, just gripping the wheel, crying. He's going to take one of my plants. So that's great. He really wanted it. He's been eyeing it for ages. But he said that they would just foster them for me and I could have them back whenever. And it was, oh my God. When I say I fucking lost my shit, I lost my shit. I have had like some true nervous system alterations immediately after it happened. Me and my friend whose house burnt down, we're talking about how you just go into another zone above and apart and beyond the daily experience. And the craziest thing is going to the supermarket immediately after. Like you don't have anything and you need everything. And it's just like, holy shit, we're just in this zombified state. And then I've also had like the sense that I'm moving through things really well and feeling proud of my resilience and my ability to meet the moment. And then a text message from an old neighbor about an Amazon package just levels me. So survivor's guilt was initially used to describe the experience of returned service people after wars that had killed their comrades. Sometimes they were kind of like directly responsible. Sometimes if somebody dies while saving another person, that person's going to experience survivor's guilt. It's used to articulate the response of those who survive accidents, like plane crashes, where others died. It also applies to people who make it out of poverty, out of the hood, out of gang life. And it's like, why did I make it out when the others didn't? Sylvia Plath said, it's as if my life were magically run by two electric currents, joyous positive or despairing negative, whichever is running at the moment dominates my life, floods it. Flood. That is how grief feels. I've seen a lot of people say they know they didn't start the fires, but there's this feeling there, this terrible, terrible regret. I think, you know, you think about those who had to stay in the wreckage, how they suffer. I feel like, I mean, I know actually that I couldn't have handled staying, and that makes me feel guilty too and weak. It's so discombobulating, you know. I've spoken on the pod before about like how I feel about thanking God for one's position in life, and also like the platitudes that people issue forth about God, like God never gives you more than you can handle, or I just knew God had my back. I don't believe in any of those things. I don't really think that there's a benevolent creator. I could be wrong, but I could be right though. I don't believe that a good God would sign off on burning down Altadena, incinerating the generations of black families who made it what it was. I don't think Mr. Nice God created California. It was the power company who didn't maintain their lines that caused the Altadena fire. Not God, and certainly not me or anyone else who has this weird feeling that it's their fault. So I think the first thing that's useful to do is turn over in one's mind when it comes to survivor's guilt. Ask who is really responsible and use rationale. But yeah, really using logical thinking, using one's rationale, who is really responsible. And another thing I think that is really important to remember is that we can handle sadness and loss. Remember the things that you've been through in the past and know that you can handle things because you have handled things. And even though some tragedies are really, really huge, we still can handle them. We have the equipment, that it's not bad or unsafe to experience intense emotion. Oh my gosh, you guys, if you like this show, you should join me over on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for Extra Body. You'll get early access to episodes, 2 bonus episodes a month, random drops here and there, and access to old seasons. So with survivor's guilt, you know, worst case scenario is people take their own lives. They, you know, it just gets so bad that it's like they can't fucking handle it, as maybe was the case with DJ AM. Just like a long suicide. And that fucking sucks. So I think it's really important to think about how people that love you, or even people that just see you around, might feel about your survival. Not everybody has strong ties to other people. Not everybody has like a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a family, parents. Not everybody has like lots of good friends, but I would say everybody has somebody. If it's like the person at the coffee shop that you say hi to in the morning, even just somebody on the other end of a phone line, a casual acquaintance who might think of you fondly. These people, your loved ones or your liked ones, they don't want you to die. They are glad that you survived a tragedy when other people didn't. You know, when you find out that something terrible's happened and maybe somebody that you love is involved, the first thing you think is, oh my God, I hope they're okay. And then when you find out they're okay, it's like, thank you, Jesus. It's not to say that their life is worth more than somebody else's life, that your life is more important than somebody else's life, but like, luck is fucking random. Every successful person who doesn't have a massive narcissistic complex will tell you that a big part of their success in life has been luck. It's like timing, luck, talent, and dedication. All these things have to, you know, you prepare for the moment and then maybe the moment might meet you, but maybe not. Luck is very random. So that's another useful thing to keep in mind when wrestling with this kind of guilt. And the next thing that I think is really useful is doing something for somebody else. Foster an animal, help a person cross the road, just a little bit of looking outward and helping other people. That really buoys up the soul.
Suicide is cringe. Don't kill yourself. You'll die anyway. Just wait. Don't kill yourself. Die anyway, just wait.
You could even like write a gratitude letter to somebody that you love. Like, who does that anymore? It's so weird. Like, I'm about to send a postcard to this barista whose house burnt down in the fires. I actually had this postcard for him before the fires, but I was too lazy to give it to him. It's a Twin Peaks postcard, and he's a Twin Peaks fan, and so am I. And I just, like, it's crazy. Like, I look back on the months that it just sat there without me going into the cafe and giving it to him. So, yeah, stuff like that. Act on your feelings. Act on your affections. Tell people that you care about them. This stuff gives your life and your survival meaning. Next thing is sleep. Sleep, sleep, sleep. We need it. It is the bridge between sanity and insanity. Rest is not self-care. It is just fucking an absolute must. If you don't get enough sleep, you go crazy. When you go crazy, you do dumb things. So find a way to sleep. Trust your body. Trust your instincts and trust the process. And trust that the body knows what to do and where it's going. And that the body gives way to the process. Sometimes, you know, instincts are all that's left. And when we die, then it's just spirit form. Like, what are instincts but spirits conspiring together, spirits at work? There have been times throughout history where certain groups have had to contend with very specific survivor's guilt. I'm thinking of the HIV and AIDS crisis. So many people died in that community, in the gay community, and they used to plan these death parties where after a wonderful night with loved ones, the host of the party would take their own lives the following morning, and everybody knew that that's what it was all about. But I don't know, I think about like the gay male community and how they just like really fucking show up for each other and they really come together and they really support each other. Small groups, marginalized groups, they're pretty amazing at community. We need these elders, obviously, to remind us what has happened in the past, where we come from, and that way we can kind of plot where we're going a little bit better. There is that feeling, why not me? This gnawing feeling, more could have been done to save others. There's like, yeah, with survivor's guilt comes anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, PTSD, even though you know that you're lucky. And then sometimes people really want to really do something about the situation, but options are really limited. Like, look how people have been online over Ukraine, Palestine, Israel, all of that. That could be an indicator of some survivor's guilt mixed in with fear, of course, that it could happen to them. But the question often remains, how can we go about our lives laughing, singing in the car, ordering our coffees, shooting the shit with our friends, or just feeling joy when others are suffering or dead through wars and COVID and terrorism, natural disasters, non-natural disasters. In Buddhism, they reckon you shouldn't lose your will to live because your existence is a miracle, a miraculous story of survival in and of itself. They think that this story, believing that your existence is a rare miracle, ignites a sense of gratitude and purpose. If you're a long-time listener, you know I'm famously suspicious of simplistic Buddhist teachings, exactly like this one. But sometimes keeping it simple, stupid works. And we're throwing everything at these mental health issues here because I'm just hoping that something's going to stick to the wall. So replacing the guilt with self-love and acceptance, that's a little mental gymnastics that you can try. The idea is to recognize your own worth and honor and live on in the memories of those who didn't make it. Younger generations, you know, they come along, they think they're really kicking up a big storm and making huge sweeping changes when the reality is the needle moves like a quarter inch this way, a quarter inch that way. Change comes in these minute increments and then there's always a huge backlash that changes all the parameters and we start again. And in order to be able to start again, you have to have resilience and a strength of purpose. It definitely does help to have a room of one's own, in my opinion. Room to dream, to have the self-confidence to claim the life that you want. So yeah, giving your life meaning beyond your own experience, that can help alleviate some survivor's guilt, living in honor of people who can't, you know. I can get in my car, I can go to Pilates, I can walk around with my tits showing if I want to. Actually, that might be going a little bit far, but you know what I'm saying. There are women all over the world who are still living in bondage and shackles. If you can't do it for yourself, do it for your sisters, do it for your brothers, do it for the children. Just make it something bigger than yourself. I have never met a strong person with an easy past. Instead of attempting to unlock the mystery of why?
Please, I'm a star!
The past is behind you. The vision is in front of you. So look in front of you. Buddha taught only three things that matter in the end. And again, I think this guy was super problematic, but this part sounds true to me. It only matters how much you loved, how gently you lived, and how gracefully you let go of things not meant for you. Oof, I'm so bad at that last one. Oh my God. Survivor's guilt is not meant for you. If the basis for spiritual life is to minimize suffering, it starts with the self. It's not easy, but it is that simple. Folks, go try the Patreon for free for 1 week. Patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. Extended episodes, bonus episodes, old seasons. A little bit of music here and there. I'll see you next time when we get into tapas. Sitting in the fire until it purifies you. Meow, meow. See you later.